The following episode of Flash Talks Cash has been brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink. The Museum of Food and Drink's Get the Ball Rolling fundraiser will take place on Sunday, March 27th at 1 p.m. at Del Posto. Tickets are $250 and can be purchased at mofad.eventbrite.com. Join Dave Arnold of the French Culinary Institute, Patrick Martins of Heritage Foods USA, and New York's finest chefs and bartenders at the inaugural fundraising event for the Museum of Food and Drink. Learn more about the museum at mofad.org.
Hi, everybody. You're tuned into the HeritageRadioNetwork.com. This is Flash Talks Cash, where the show about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, with my co-host, Andrew, my son, Newman.
Good afternoon.
You finally made it. And my producer, engineer, Jack Inslee.
Hello.
Today, we broadcast live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5, and all shows, episodes, are archived on the website, and there's always a free podcast available for downloading if you want to listen to us while you're flying around the world or anything else. Call us while we're live streaming. We'd love to hear from you, 718-497-2128. Or you can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.com. We'd love to hear from you, your comments, your questions, your thoughts, your ideas. So today we're talking about...
Are you feeling better?
How do you mind your money? Yes, I'm feeling better. I couldn't talk last week, so I had to take a pass. The only thing you can't do when you do live radio is, if you don't have a voice, you can't do your job.
I guess.
I had no voice.
I could have done the show.
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Why not? I could have come on here and ranted about something for about a half hour like you usually do.
I don't rant.
You get into some rants.
I absolutely don't rant. I pass along information.
Yes. I do. And opinions.
And my opinions.
And your opinions.
So how do you mind your money? So you're curious about how you mind your money? Well, let me tell you something. First, I'm going to tell you that, you know, I'm talking about your money personality and how it happens, how it's formed. What goes into it? How does it culminate? So I have a few different personality money types, and I'm going to read them to you, and you're going to tell me who you could think of. You don't have to disclose it, but you know people who are like that. First is the fool. I'm talking about how he or she handles their money. The fool, right? You could think of somebody who's a fool, impetuous, restless, undisciplined, financially irresponsible, optimistic, overly generous, carefree, adventuresome, lives for today.
That's me.
That's not you.
Why not? I live for today.
You are a fool with your money?
Some days.
But you don't have to...
Can I be a schizophrenic on this?
There's a
can I be multiple personalities?
Yes, well, yes, you can. You probably... I will all blend of a couple of different things. There's the tyrant. They're secretive, rigid, controlling, fearful, manipulative, aggressive, critical, unforgiving, and materialistic.
Wow, that is you.
That is not me.
What? You're a tyrant.
I am not a tyrant.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Then there's the martyr.
This is what you want to be.
Self-sacrificing. I'm not a martyr. Self-sacrificing, controlling, manipulative, secretive, long-suffering, passive-aggressive, compassionate, wise, a caretaker type. I don't know who that is. That ain't me. Is that you?
No.
Jack? He's not listening.
I might fit into that category.
The martyr?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, keep
listening. More than the other two.
Well, we have eight of them. So the first one was the fool, and the second one was the tyrant. The third one's the martyr. Now we're going to be the victim. That's emotional, resentful, financially irresponsible, unforgiving, addictive, lives in the past.
That might be me, too.
See? We're all a blend, a little bit of some of these. Andrew, you're not the victim.
No.
No. How about this one? The warrior. Driven, powerful, competitive, disciplined, loyal, goal-oriented, calculating, financially successful.
Are these like personality traits or these actual financial things?
Financial money types.
I know,
financial
right?
Money types. Financial.
I want to be a warrior.
I'm a warrior.
You are a warrior, huh?
Well, I am.
Okay.
Driven, powerful, competitive, disciplined. What else? All right, here's the next one. The creative. Artistic and or spiritual, passive, non-materialistic, detached, eternally motivated, or and a loner. I know some people like that.
I think I'm like a blend of these things.
Right. Here's another one. The innocent. Trusting, indecisive, financially dependent, non-confrontational, internally anxious, and seeks security.
Oh, I know a lot of people like that.
You know a lot of people like that.
Yeah,
they don't want to take responsibility. And here's the last one. The magician. Conscious, wise, trusting, generous, optimistic, confident, powerful, compassionate, balanced, a truth seeker.
That's me.
Damn, that sounds good.
I want to be that guy.
And by the way, the warrior and the magician seem to be close. Anyway, the goal for anybody who wants to be, you know, in the right about their money, handling their money, you strive to be a magician. Okay? That's the goal.
So
that's the goal here. I think that's the goal. I think that's a great place to be financially. Conscious, wise, trusting, generous, optimistic, confident, powerful, compassionate, balanced, and a truth seeker. That's pretty good place to be.
What truth are you seeking with your money?
Truth seeking in that, you know, you seek out, well, you stay away from deception, and you try to do the right thing. You know, I'm always trying to teach you about doing the right thing, right?
Truth, oh, you seeker. Are?
I'm always trying to teach you that.
Really? Okay. When did those lessons start?
Okay, so how do people's personalities evolve? Well, it's complex. And frankly, let me start off with this. I really believe that you can change your financial personality throughout your lifetime with some discipline and some actions and some conscientious changes to be made in your life. So how does it happen? Well, the attitudes of money are learned. And you're also influenced by your ethnicity, your gender, class, your nationality, your immigrant status, your income, your education, your religion, marital status, and your family makeup. So you're affected by all different things. And it's throughout your lifetime, it can change, okay? For example, an American white Anglo-Saxon household tends to think of money as a tool to promote individual expression and self-reliance, right? Sounds good? Take it to the extreme. That's why professional athletes have 6 cars when 1 or 2 would do it. We have a caller?
We have a caller.
Oh. I'd love to hear the caller. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Who am I talking to?
My name is Jason.
Hi, Jason.
So I had a question. I'm a younger guy. I'm trying to get on with some responsible spending, you know, try to budget a little bit, but... You know, I have trouble, I guess, you know, putting money away and everything like that. I'm kind of young. I go out a lot.
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions on, like, how to kind of, like a young party guy budget sort of, you know?
I think that Andrew might be able to help you right on there.
Well, it depends. You just got
to... Well, Andrew's a young guy who likes to party. He needs to stay...
You just need to figure out how much money you're making and how much you like to party, and then figure out where you can party according to how much money you're making. You know, you have to set aside your fixed expenses. And then, you know, you budget for how much you want to save, and then you can go out.
But tell them, be more specific. How about you got to say, okay, I want to put away $100 a paycheck or whatever.
No, I don't know how much you want to put away.
Well, you have to be a little disciplined first.
You have to be tough on yourself.
Saving is part of your fixed expenses. And then you can spend the rest. And don't blow your budget, man. Put that credit card away.
Actually, I use my credit card more than cash. When I have cash, it flies out of my pocket. I don't know about
Well,
you,
I don't know.
Jason,
it could go either way. What do you think, Jason? Is it possible?
No, I mean, cash burns holes in my pockets.
Yeah. But you don't find that if you have a credit card or an ATM card, you go and say, what the hell? It doesn't feel real.
No, not really. Because it's easier to look at that number because you have like 30 days afterwards. So you have that number you have to achieve.
Oh, and you have
a month to
save.
And you have a month to save up for that is the way I look at it.
Okay, so, I think the key here is make sure you put away a set amount each paycheck, like just as you do towards your rent and your other bills, into your savings. This way, you get used to that, and you get used to not living on that.
Also, one thing, I would have a separate savings account in a separate bank or something, so you can't access that money as quickly.
Right, and link it.
Yeah,
right.
So you can't actually, you know, access it when you want to just go out and burn some money, so it makes it a little bit more difficult to access that cash.
Right. And have a goal. You want to use the money for a vacation, or you want to use the money to buy a new computer, whatever it is, a fun thing.
You really just have to be disciplined. Very tough on yourself.
Yes.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. Stay tuned and listen to how we're going to help you figure out your money personality, Jason. Okay, so thank you for that, caller.
What personality type would you say he is?
Jason's one of those carefree guys.
I think he's a partier.
Well, he's not a fool. We're not going to say he's a fool because he's thinking about it. That's a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. We don't know enough about Jason, but I think that we all of us, can take a piece or two from each one of them, and that's part of our personality.
I think Jason has a very similar problem to a lot of younger people nowadays.
Of course they do. Not enough money and too many parties.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. It's tough when you go out 5-6 days a week,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's true. You got to learn how to drink seltzer. Water.
What? What?
I was going to say whiskey.
I was going to say, just get it in quick, right, Jack?
Exactly.
Or you know what they say? You know what I read today? And you could do this. This makes total sense. Drink before you go out, and so you get your buzz on. And when you go out, have one or two drinks instead of trying to get your buzz at the bar. It's much more expensive.
Or just go out for happy hour. It's half price.
Happy hour is a good idea. But then you got to go home after happy. And don't buy dinner out.
I'm assuming
That's the problem.
I'm assuming Jason can hang for a while. So I think he can handle himself.
Can we get back to my thing?
If you want to talk about that, I like talking about personal budgeting and stuff
like
that.
We're going to talk about how did you become the financial wizard that we all became. So then there's the white people in America have dual incomes, full-time professionals, spend most of their waking hours working.
Why is it only white people?
Well, I'm going to get to other people. You got to give me a chance. I'm going to start with these people. Come down to a quality of life. They say, we work hard for our money. Let's enjoy it. Why not? So the average American is working hard, right? Ridiculous. We work equivalent of 2 more months each year than Germans or French. And the 4-day work week promised so many years ago, out the window.
When was that promised?
Oh, when I was growing up, 4-day work weeks were all the rage. We're going to strive to go to 4 days a week and enjoy our lives. That never happened. And in fact, we went to 6 days a week, 7 days a week. Okay, so there are significant cultural differences that show up when examining people's attitudes about money. So Latinos, they use money collectively for family goals. Okay. Have you ever met?
This is very stereotypical.
No, I'm just general types.
Yeah,
I'm
general.
Just general.
Stereotypical.
It's not general. So
but
listen.
Why are you racist?
Shut up, man. Now,
Jack, does this sound racist to you, Jack?
No,
I think it sounds very racist.
Would
to
you
me.
Let me finish my thought?
Oh, come on, Jack. Back me up on this one. Flash, getting racist.
Every
Professor Flash.
Hispanic that comes from the other side.
Every Hispanic from the other side. What are you saying right now? Literally, what are you saying?
They send money back home.
Who? What? Immigrant? Oh, my God.
But let me tell you, a lot of immigrants do, and there's nothing wrong with that. And a lot of people, it's not to suggest that other families don't support their family members, even, immigrants all over the world. But in the Latino culture, the support is an obligation, not a choice. It's required. And that's the way they think, and that's the way they feel about their money. And their families are more than just their mother and father, their sisters, brothers. It extends to all sorts of, all sorts of family, close friends, in-laws, godparents.
I don't know.
Your family.
Apparently
that's,
you know this.
I'm telling you, I did my research today.
Yeah.
Okay. And Latin American society, cash is still king, especially for the over 40-year-old. Anybody over 40 years old, they still operate on the cash basis. They're not using the debit cards, the credit cards, electronic payments. That was kind of the way it was in America 30 or 40 years ago. Cash was still king, and people used some credit cards, but it wasn't as prevalent as it is today. The younger generation in Latin America have acclimated to the electronic way of the world, and all over Latin America, they're becoming much more westernized or American in their thoughts about handling their money. So the U.S. was 40 or 50 years ago completely into paying everything cash. People used to spend the whole afternoon going from utility company to bank to telephone company to your landlord and go and pay your bills in cash. It was very common.
I guess that's why they needed the 4-day work week.
So now we're going to talk about
my jokes, huh?
Poor people. Now, remember I said it could be gender, religion, it could also be economic level, the income level. Poor people, the ghetto cash economy applies to all poor people, whether they're black, white, yellow, green, pink, or blue. So these people don't have access to credit. They can't buy the same products and they can't get the same services that middle class people have because they don't have access to it, and it's not in their neighborhood, and some of them don't even have cars, so they can't get out of their neighborhoods. So they have this ghetto cash economy, and it's a tough way to, it's very difficult for a lot of them to get out of this cycle. The middle class, and the upper class still do everything electronically, payroll deductions, electronic bill payments, and other conveniences. This is not available in the ghetto. And so the poor people really have a different mindset when it comes to their money. You agree with that one?
I guess so.
He's not talking. So what else do we have? We have Westerners often are seen as individualistic and materialistic, and this may be spreading around the world. As I told you, it's going down through South America now and Central America. But attitudes about money are different around the world. In India, money is essential. It's an essential part of your life and a potential obstacle to salvation. The symbols attached to money in India are the products of the life state, the life aim, and the social role. So money holds different meanings at different life stages in Indian culture. It's used to build prosperity, material prosperity, enhance your family relationships, and do one's duty in life, and attain salvation or complete freedom. So through life in India, money changes its meaning at different life stages. And lots of people in India see Americans as impoverished because money is not used to promote spirituality. I think that's really important and a lot of truth to that. What do you think about that one?
I don't know why money has anything to do with spirituality.
Well, I think that spirituality, I think Americans mix money up and having money with spirituality. They don't have any spirituality. It's an important part. It's all part of the balance. You got to have spirituality in addition to financial
success. Who says that?
Success. It's all part of a balanced life.
Okay.
If you have a lot of money and you're spiritually bankrupt, you're still going to have a miserable life.
That's not true.
Could have a miserable
life.
You
could.
Okay.
Who are you to say?
I believe
that. Why are you getting all like philosophical here? This is like ridiculous. You're making racist comments and then you're making philosophical judgments on people.
Nice.
Thank you, Jack.
In England, needing and using money clashes with the guilt associated with having money and wealth. And in some cultures, money provides a constant struggle between good and evil. It's not just me. It's a spiritual concept that money doesn't bring you happiness. And that's something that you have to accept. Money is just a part of life.
Are you kidding me? It puts a smile on my face every time I have it.
Because you don't have any.
And power, when I got it, I'm happy.
The notion that...
What notion? Stop talking. Let's take a break.
No, I'm not ready.
It's been... Oh.
All right. We'll take a break and come back and talk about China. All right? Talk to you in a minute.
Is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Food Scene Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network. Hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel, photo editor of Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan magazines, he'll further explore the amalgamation of food and art by talking to artists from a multitude of media. Guests will range from photographers, food stylists, interior architects for restaurants, industrial designers, all the players that make you want to eat with your eyes. Get ready to feast your ears every Tuesday at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay, we're back. Flash Talks Cash. We're talking about how do you mind your money. Around the world, they have different views on money, and Andrew and I are talking about it. Well, I'm talking about it, and Andrew's, all as usual, disagreeing with me.
So, well, you think you have these preconceived notions.
I'm just telling you my research.
Your preconceived notion. Your research. What about your opinion? What about your personal opinion?
I do believe in spiritualness is an important
part of
money.
What does that have to do with money? What does spirituality have to do with finances?
I'm talking about the fact that many Americans are spiritually bankrupt and they think that money is God. It ain't. Okay. So back to China and Taiwan.
I'm just dumbfounded by that. Like, just because...
Maybe you didn't get to that stage of life yet. I told you, in India, at different stages, money has different meanings. And you'll understand that as you grow older. Right now, you're striving for money because you're young and you don't have a lot of it. But you'll learn that money is not the only thing.
I have an idea.
Oh, boy. We're in for it.
I have an idea.
Yes?
You should help my spiritual growth by taking
the
striving
church
for money, taking my necessity for money off my plate.
Yeah, well, that's not how it works.
But I want you to help me spiritually grow.
Well, if I want to, if you want to grow spiritually, having the money is not spiritual.
Well, then I won't be striving for money constantly.
Fine, go to a Buddhist temple.
But I'll still be looking for money.
Well, you can do both. You can do things.
But I don't have time because I got to get this money so quickly.
Yeah. Life's journey.
Jack, is it not a struggle every day?
Tough to find time.
Exactly.
Life is a journey.
You should give me money. Jack should get a couple of bones too over there in the booth. And you know, we should have some more time for our spiritual guidance and
search. Instead of standing in the bar, go to church.
I'm not standing in the bar. What church is open at 8 o'clock at night?
Oh, there are churches that are open 24/7. There's places. You go to a Buddhist temple. You can go to.
Are you on the Buddhist thing? Well, what do you want to be Buddhist?
No, but they have a very balanced way of looking at things. They'll teach you that spiritual journey that you're looking for. They'll teach you. By the way, I bought you a great book. Speaking of helping you, I did buy you that great book.
Which one was that?
Surfing the Himalayas.
I read that.
Yeah, and did you, that was about the spiritual journey.
I meditated
journey.
For about 30 seconds
go,
one day.
But maybe
after
you should reread
them.
That one.
I read it.
Reread it.
I wasn't reaching the third level of nirvana or something like
well,
that.
Well, keep working it. It's a life journey.
But
I
don't have time to do the meditation.
The Hindus,
I need to get to work all the time.
In China and Taiwan.
And the drinking
the
doesn't
wealth,
help.
Wealth sometimes is seen as evil that can destroy families and interfere with serious thinking and even promote superficiality. Okay? So around the world, besides the American way, there are better ways to handle your money. Okay? I think there's better ways all over. South Africa, the black South Africans feel much more secure about their money because that is not the only medium of exchange that they understand. They have other things in their culture besides money that they use to participate in their economy. I'm trying to think of the word. Bartering and other things, okay?
Yeah.
Muslim countries, they don't approve of charging interest. They consider it usurious, and they don't do business with companies that have that make income from interest. So you see, the cultures around the world feel differently. The bottom line is Americans really don't really have the best outlook on money. I think that we are in the age of consumerism, and we know that consumerism is a very flawed spiritual path to take. That's my opinion. I think that we can open our eyes and open our ears to learn how other people live. Maybe they do a little better job than we do. Or blend it. Just like we're a blend of all those different kinds, we can blend some of the other cultures' outlook on money. What do you think about that, Drew? That's a possibility?
I need a beer.
Maybe you should go to church. Okay, so now we're going to go to the email bag. I got an email question this week.
Yes.
It is tax season, but I don't think it has anything to do with taxes this week. Jack, you want to read that one?
No, this is from Timmy, and it's not about partying, unfortunately.
I got nothing then. I'm out.
The question is, Dear Flash and Andrew, my wife and I are seriously looking to buy. In order to do so, we need to receive a cash gift from parents to make the down payment reasonable. Can you tell me the tax implications of giving or receiving cash gifts for down payments, or point me toward a better resource? Thanks, Tim.
All right. Well, Drew, do you want to help him out here?
I'm waiting for my gifts to start rolling
in. I knew you were going to say something.
So I have no idea. I don't know what the implications are.
Well, Tim, getting money from your parents for a down payment is pretty common.
Isn't that illegal?
No, it's nothing illegal about it. Your parents would have to, if it's over $13,000 from your mother, $13,000 from your father, and if they give it to you and your wife, they could give $13,000 to your wife each. So $52,000. If the gift is over $52,000, then they have to file a gift tax return. Now, gift tax return, I've said this many times, I'll say it again, is not actually a tax. It's just an information return telling the government that we're transferring assets from one family or one bank account to another, and they just want to know how Tim and his wife suddenly came up with $52,000 that they didn't have yesterday and they got it today. And so there's no tax, it's just information. And it ultimately will reduce the one-time exclusion from the parents' estate. And so it's too complicated. All I have to tell you is the parents should speak to their accountant and perhaps have to file a gift tax return on April 15th of the year after. So it's 2011. It will be done April 15th, 2012. And Tim and his wife accept this gift, and there is no nothing for them to do on their side. The other side of it is the mortgage people may want a letter or something, and that I cannot answer to, because frankly, the mortgage people change their song every day, what they want regarding these gifts from their parents. But there's nothing illegal about it. It's very common and it happens all the time. And I wish them good luck. I do think it's a great time for them to get back into the real estate market because rates are low,
yeah.
Mortgage rates are low. Prices, I think, are pretty well at the bottom. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, but it looks pretty low. So good luck to them. We're going to do a little bit of Andrew versus the law today. Andrew, we're talking about old folks.
Wait, don't talk over my theme song.
Andrew, we're talking about old folks.
My theme song is still going.
Well, he's going to play it forever.
I wish he would.
He's it's like awesome 6 minutes song. Long. Yeah,
this is great. Let's just close the show with this, Jack.
Now, I want to talk about old folks. Andrew, you know a couple old folks, right? Do you know that there's a thing called financial abuse? These poor old people are being financially abused.
Are they being kept alive for the Social Security checks?
No, it's worse than that. Elderly people are missing money, and unfortunately, they're victims of these crooked people. It could be their family members, could be the caretakers, could be strangers, could be friends. But, you know, they're bilking these old people. They
How are they bilking them?
Well, there's all different ways of doing it. I'll tell you. One way I found was this guy, he was very lonely. His wife died. He's 85 years old. And he struck up a relationship with a broker. And eventually he agreed to put the bulk of his portfolio in this risky security. And the broker told him, portrayed the investment as safe and secure. And so he bought into it, and it turned out to be fraud, wiping out his entire investment. So now he's got a claim against the brokerage firm. He lost $500,000. And
where was that?
Where was it?
Yeah.
I don't know exactly. And the guy is looking, he's hopeful at this point to get about 10 cents on the dollar. That's pretty sad, right? 10% back. Out of a $500,000, he'll be lucky to get $500,000.
No.
No what? No?
Out of a $500,000, he'd be lucky to see
$50,000. I'm sorry.
Wow, you are sparking. You're not even igniting. You're not flashing anything right
There's
now.
There's another scam that's going on. These reverse mortgages. You know what a reverse mortgage is?
Yep, you told me about that once.
Okay, so reverse mortgages, you know, they old people, you have to be over 62. If you have a house that has a lot of equity in it, what they'll do is you go to the bank and you say, buy my house for me. Give me my money now and I'll live here and I don't have to pay the mortgage back. And when I die, you take the house, sell it, and you pay off the mortgage, and the extra will go to my heirs. Okay, so suppose you own a house that's $500,000 worth $500,000. You have no mortgage on it, right? So you go and say, okay, well, give me $300,000. So the bank gives you $300,000. You live on that. You have a nice life, and then when you die, the bank will sell the house, get the $300,000, and the other $200,000 will go to your heirs. It sounds like a perfect plan, except the problem is, you know, with these.
What about the interest?
Well, no, the it's added to the mortgage.
Okay.
So instead of $300,000, you pay back however long you lived on this interest and so forth. So the problem is they're putting these mortgages, these reverse mortgages, in the older person's name, very common, because the older you are, the more you can get out of the house. Okay? That's how it goes.
Okay.
Because it'll be a shorter term, right? The problem is these older spouses are dying. And the remaining spouse all of a sudden has to leave the house because they can't afford, they can't buy the house back from the bank. The bank is now foreclosing on these surviving spouses.
Okay.
That's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
So that's another form of fraud.
Well, frankly, sell your house if you
well, can. what about signing a joint loan? Wouldn't that make more sense? So there's that fraud. Okay. That's a bad one. Now it's coming up. Now all these people are being foreclosed on. You never know. You can't guess when somebody's going to die. Who's going
to
outlive
who? I don't know why you have
to
do that. Just sell your house and move somewhere else.
Well, there's a lot of people that want to sell their house.
Then don't
take
a reverse mortgage.
Well, it's a good program for people.
But
why can't you enjoy your money?
But then you're stuck out on your ass.
Well, not always.
Then what are you going to do? Like, it's a good program, but then you're upset when you got kicked out of your house because you can't afford to buy a house back.
Well,
put in the younger person's name. And what if that person dies? Then the other person is
correct.
SOL.
So maybe get a joint loan.
How about you just don't do that and do something
else? Some people don't have money.
Then sell your house and move somewhere else. I don't care about those people.
Stop yelling at everybody.
You rant sometimes. I'm ranting.
Well, old, though. You're you yelling know, at old people.
You're yelling at old people.
I'm yelling at people who just move out of your house.
No, it's not easy for old people to move sometimes.
Why not?
Because they're settled in that house. That's where they love to live.
If you need the money, you got to go.
They don't need the money sometimes. They just take it because they're going to enjoy their asset while they're alive.
Then take a small amount of money, and then you can pay it off.
You never know when you're going
to
die.
You have to pay the house off. You have to buy the house back. This is ridiculous.
No mercy for the old.
Not at all.
I knew that Andrew was
going to... I am tired of supporting them. Social Security is killing me. I am done.
We're going to have to say goodbye. Andrew's blood pressure is going out off the charts here. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Join Wine Impresarios Aaron Fitzpatrick and Brian DeMarco as they dish out on the latest industry news with winemakers and tastemakers on Heritage Radio Network's revamped wine show, Unfiltered. Aaron Fitzpatrick, one of the first hosts on HRN with her program At the Root of It, amps up the volume and unfiltered content with co-host Brian DeMarco in this 2011 Redux. True to the original format, Aaron and Brian will keep you abreast of current happenings and break down the news and global events, distilling complex into anecdotal stories that inspire. From media and political events to hailstorms in Argentina, no topic is out of bounds. Tune in every week to hear them chat up the industry's biggest personalities and host on-air tastings with visiting vintners and the country's hottest sommeliers. Whether you're an expert or an enthusiast, Unfiltered demystifies wine and lets you know what it really takes to get a bottle from the vineyard to your neighborhood wine shop. Unfiltered broadcasts live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Foods USA. In late March, Dan, Andrea, Patrick, and the Heritage team are traveling to the coldest reaches of the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont to help the Cantor family tap sugar maple trees. Then the maple sap will flow down to the sugar house where it is boiled gently over a wood fire just as it has been for generations. Just a few days later, this grade A amber syrup will be poured into the beautiful glass jugs and sent to you for pancakes, waffles, desserts, glazing hams, or just drinking by the spoonful. There's only a limited supply, so order today. Each 1-liter bottle is $45, including delivery. Delivery will be at the end of March, and we will notify you of the exact shipping date. Each shipment will include a CD explaining the whole process. You can also follow us on YouTube while we work and bottle. In the meantime, you can head over to the Heritage Radio Network archives and listen to Linda Palacio talk about maple syrup on her show, A Taste of the Past, Episode 12. For more information, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com.